Hello and welcome to season two of the Diary of a CFO podcast. This is a podcast where finance leaders get to share the lessons, the wins, the challenges that shape their careers as well as their organizations. I'm your host, Wasia Kamon, and I'm so delighted to have you with me today as we're going to talk about highlights of season one, what to expect in season two. But first, here's my professional bio.
This is Wasia Kamon. Wasia is a CPA, CMA, and holds MBA. She is the CFO of Access to Capital for Entrepreneurs, a Georgia leading community development financial institution, and has spent the past 15 years working across the manufacturing, technology, pharmaceutical, and nonprofit sectors in various accounting and FP&A leadership roles. Recognized twice as a 40 under 40 honoree by CPA Practice Advisor, Wasia is also a keynote speaker and a guest faculty of the Wharton Online FPA Certificate Program. Her insights on leadership and strategic influence have been featured in publications such as The Wall Street Journal, Accounting Today, and Strategic Finance Magazine. She actively contributes to the accounting profession as a member of the AICPA Women's Initiatives Executive Committee and the Future of Finance Leadership Advisory Group. She also serves as a board member and treasurer for Hope Incorporated, a nonprofit organization supporting low-income single parents in pursuing higher education. She recently launched a podcast titled The Diary of a CFO, a podcast where finance leaders share the lessons, challenges, and wins that shape their careers as well as their organizations.
Wow. The first time I saw that bio, I was like, is that me? So I'm incredibly grateful for the GHA marketing team, as well as my amazing sound editor who has been with me from day one, DB Sound. We're recording over 30 episodes together for season one. Now, season one was audio only, but what you may not know is that I was actually recorded the full video for every episode. So as we kick off in season two, I want to take a moment and share with you some of the highlights of those early conversations. Check this out. Regardless of your company size, executives account for no more than 1% of all employees, which means if you want to be part of the 1%, you cannot think and act like the 99%. I know that could be some harsh truth here, but it's true. If you want to be part of 1%, I like to say that your career is almost like a venture or startup. You often have to put your money first before other investors show up. So there's a lot of things that you have to be willing to do differently. And the earlier you know about it, the easier it gets. Because as we go through our career, we usually think about four keys, right? What is going to open doors for us in our career? Key number one, education. Number two, technical skills. Number three, soft skills, or others would say human skills. Number four, experience. And we could even add a fifth key, which is hard work. Okay? Let's say this first door here. You probably opened it with the key of education. And then maybe the other door you are able to open because of your technical skills. Maybe it was because you were the best person in using Excel, the one who better understood the ERP system, or any other things that really helped you be that technical go-to person. And then as you grow, you get experience, you get soft skills, you realize, oh, leadership, this is all good. And then you get to that yellow door, you get to that executive door, and you try all your keys. And that's where I was stuck a couple years ago. I was a controller for about 5 years, and at some point, our CFO left, and I was like, oh, I'm controller. I'm a CPA. They're definitely going to pick me to be the next CFO. No. Okay? So I was like, okay. I went back to my education key, right? I went back and I went for my CMA. Even though I was already a CPA, I'm going to do this, and it's going to help me open that door. Didn't work out. It's the number one mistake we do when trying to get into executive leadership. It is that when you want to reach a higher level, that door may look the same, but the locking system has changed. You actually need a PIN code, a three-digit code to get you through. Presence, influence, and networking. You need executive presence, which is how you show up. You need influence to go from one idea all the way to the execution, and you need networking. So the first clip I want to share is from episode 10. That was a recap of a recording of a webinar I did back in December 2024. The title of the webinar was The Number One Mistake Keeping You from Executive Roles and How to Fix It. Now on to episode 25, Secrets of Rockstar CFOs Jack McElhaugh on Developing the Next Generation of CFOs. Now this clip is where he shared very insightful advice for accountants, specifically controllers who want to become CFOs. I was a controller myself before becoming a CFO, and on someone's resume, it may seem like a very short, easy bridge to cross from controllers to CFO, right? You start as staff accountant, senior accountant, accounting manager, controller, and the natural next step is CFOs. But that transition isn't as straightforward. Check this out.
I reached out to CFO customer, and by that I mean CEOs, investors, board members, and other members of the C-suite. And I asked, what do you value in a CFO? And it actually led itself to a nice little acronym. But what was interesting, almost nobody said finance or accounting skills. And, you know, maybe mistakes. But it lent itself to an acronym. It's pretty easy to remember. So folks, write this down. CREATE. And these were the sort of the formula for a good CFO. It's collaboration, resiliency, empathy. A is agility, the ability to react quickly to things. Transparency and empowerment. They said a good leader of their team, someone who can develop a world-class finance team. A few people mentioned digital mastery because that relationship with the CIO and, you know, you can't be a good CFO without some digital expertise, right?
But yes,
you need a lot of skills. It's a very complex job today. When I was in, it was best accountant. So
yes. So what would you say controllers now, because I came also from a controllership background, but I had a chance to work full-time in FP&A for a couple of years, which helped me expand into, you know, business partnering, modeling, understanding scenario, becoming more strategic. But I feel the pain for a lot of controllers when they're told you're not strategic enough. And so that next step is not guaranteed, if I can say. What would be your advice to them?
Yeah, first, I don't know that they're not strategic enough as much as they're in a role that doesn't allow them to be strategic enough.
Yes.
Because like people who aren't controllers don't respect and appreciate how hard that job is.
Oh, gosh.
To lead a team, and, you know, if it's a complex business, to produce accurate and timely financial statements to make the trains run on time. That's so hard. The role is demanding. And if you're faced with a decision to spend some time learning some strategic stuff, or you're a public company and the books have to be closed by the fifth day of the following month, which you're going to do, right?
You know? Yes.
So yeah, it's not that, but there are ways you can expose yourself to some things. You know, find a CFO who wants to be a good mentor to you, your boss. And also I recommend, and this is one of the things I love about you, is you and I have taken this commitment seriously. I think once you get to the CFO role, you owe it to be a mentor to the next generation of leaders. And I know that you take that very seriously. And so, you know, find a CFO or somebody who's a mentor that you don't work for. And, you know, find a CFO in a different but similar company. The other thing is, when I wrote my first book, one of the women I interviewed, she was a controller and her mentor was a VP of sales. She was like 29, 30 at the time and kind of savvy. You know, we were both in our 50s when I interviewed her. But, you know, looking back, I'm like, that was kind of, you know, you're a little bit ahead of the curve. But what was the thinking? And she said, you know, not in an arrogant way, but she said, I knew the debits and credits better than my bosses did. She was a divisional controller. She aspired to be a divisional CFO. And, you know, today she's a CFO, the CFO. But she said, I wasn't going to get better at debits and credits and even some finance. That wasn't going to get me the job, and it wasn't going to make me better in the job when I got it. So she thought if she could understand the business from the perspective of a customer, why the customer is interested in this company, you know, what it means to be a customer, what we can do to support sales growth, I thought that would make me a better CFO when the time came.
Now, these were all great clips of how to get into the role of a CFO, or executive leader. Now, assuming you follow the advice, You probably wonder, okay, now I got the role. What do I do from now? Glad you asked. So here are a few more clips from Matt Ziegler, Jessica McLean, and Matthew Harlan on how to navigate the role and optimize your finance function.
Having the FP&A background, I've been very quickly digesting business models and what they need throughout my career. So I think I'm pretty good at it. But in some cases, that might be the second, you know, hurdle is if you don't understand and you can't articulate, if you couldn't stand up at a customer conference as a CFO and talk about the business and talk about the value and talk about the products, right, then you shouldn't be the CFO.
Wow.
Right? Like, you may not be able to speak for an hour, but you should be able to speak for at least 10 minutes on why this company drives value, what it means, why do customers come back, right? And why do they like what business, you know, what they get out of it. So I've been trying to go to customer conferences and events. And again, I'm lucky in that this company has those kinds of things. Every company does. You might have to get on sales calls and maybe you don't even announce yourself as the CFO, right? Because that sends a whole different, you know, tone of the conversation, of course, if you're on a customer call, right? But you have to listen to what the customers are saying and hear what the challenges that they're trying to face are. So you fully understand what this business's purpose is, right? Achieve more of that thing, right? Or question, are we achieving what we thought we were achieving, right? So that sort of business understanding and hearing from the customers and what they want, I think is really important. And every business is different in how you would accomplish that, but you got to find a way to do it.
Jessica McLean.
When you're able to let go, if you're able to empower and in your staff, again, they're engaged, that gives you the space and the opportunity to do the higher level thinking, the higher level work. You know what? This is why you're here. This is why we hired you. So let it go. That's the thing being in leadership is you have to be flexible and adaptable and understand your staff, understand who's working for you and how they operate. Right? You have some staff you can give them and tell them this needs to be done by Friday. And by Thursday, it's done. And it's done almost perfectly. Others do need some more help. Some need guidance. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's up to you as a leader to understand that additional guidance, that additional coaching, that additional support is needed. So you can kind of pull that out of them. And so that's when you take the time to get to know the staff that work for you, when you take the time to get to know what drives them, what motivates them, what agitates them, what fuels them and what drains them, then you're able to give the work that you know empowers them and fills them up and gives them a sense of fulfillment and purpose in the work that they're doing. But I'm going to put that on leadership. That's where it starts.
Matthew Harlan.
I think Treasury kind of gave me a springboard to think about, wow, I'm more diverse as a leader. I have a more diverse skill set. It's more than just interpreting the P&L, the financial statements, or giving a presentation on free cash flow. I can understand go-to-market strategy. I can understand sales. I can understand partnerships. And so I think that gave me a view or maybe even a mirror to say, I can do a lot more. And I think sometimes us finance people, we don't give ourselves enough credit to kind of expand our wings. We just want to follow these like very strong trench marks of, okay, I'm going to go from GL accountant to controller to chief accounting officer. And that's like all I can do. Then we get stuck at some point where we can't see anything beyond the ceiling that we've created for ourselves. And so I think continuous learning is one something that's helped me is like not putting myself in a box of I'm just an X, but allowing myself to develop as a leader, as a professional, and then also taking risk, right? Treasury is really known for taking risk with measure. We're prudent. We're not hedge funds. We want preservation of capital, but also we want to increase utilization of cash. And so that requires some level, not a lot, some level of risk taking. And so I think I just learned like taking risk is good as long as you kind of measure your range of possibilities of outcomes and just do it, right? Like we all have one life to live. We don't have a lot of time here. And so you have to decide who you want to be, how you want to shape the world and what skills you need to get there and just go for it. Yeah, I think it's so dynamic. No day is the same. There's a lot of context switching, which I think kind of has helped maybe create a stronger business athlete. where you need to, you know, one conversation you're talking about, you know, strategic vision of the company, or another conversation you're talking about product rollout, another conversation you're talking about, you know, go-to-market strategy and content, another conversation you're talking about the sales process. And so I think being able to be versatile across many different mediums of a company has allowed me to have a greater appreciation for how companies work. I think a lot of times within finance, you always hear this, like, why can't they do X? And why can't we get this number to be where we want it to be? And sometimes we don't have appreciation for what the sales team is doing, right? We don't have appreciation marketing is doing. And so I think being able to see it from this view has allowed me not only to deepen my understanding, but also to have a greater appreciation. Like, some of this stuff is hard, right? And it can't just be solved. Like, we can't just go chase the numbers. But finding ways to maybe get more collaborative with teams in order for us to get the output that we desire. If you think about the concept of an athlete, you're always kind of working on your craft. And if you're playing a sport, you're not always doing the same thing, right? Let's just use basketball for an example. There's offense, defense. There's team collaboration in terms of running plays. There's the coach on the sideline giving the plays. There's the distraction of the audience. And so there's so many things that need to be take into account, and still you are required and you are looked at to work within a system or a player. And so if everyone on the court was trying to score a bucket at the same time, there'd be chaos. And so the reason why I like kind of the use of the word athlete is you have to understand your place and time, right? What is my role in this company? And then doing that to the best of your ability. So for example, if you are a rebounder and you're not necessarily going to be the best scorer on the team, go out and be the best freaking rebounder that you can be. That's going to help your team win. And I think when we think about ourselves that way, we don't have to be all things, right? We don't have to do all things. If we can just execute really well on the tasks that we've been given, it's going to help the broader context of the team win. And so I think a lot of times you have people that want to be heroes of every function and they start to bleed over because ultimately maybe they want to be, you know, like you one day in a CFO, and they think the way to get there is to just take the ball and ball hog, but it actually hurts the team. And so new ways to keep in your expertise, I think, allows you to be called upon for other areas, right? I think thinking sometimes of yourself and your profession in a sense of athletics really helps you understand what's going on and understand how to be successful.
Of course, I couldn't include every single clip from every single episode. So if you hadn't had a chance to catch up on the past episodes, I definitely encourage you to do so. They are absolutely worth revisiting. Now, episode one, I do encourage you to check it out because it shares a story about my journey to the CFO seat and why I started this podcast, The Diary of a CFO. Now, on to season two. You will get full video episodes, and I'm also opening the doors, The Diary of a CFO Off the Record. This is a new interactive newsletter that will be on Substack. I'll drop the link below. And it's where I'll answer the questions we don't always get to answer on LinkedIn. The behind-the-scenes decisions, the in-between moments, the stuff that doesn't always fit the podcast. I tested the idea a little back in episode 23, and the response was incredible. Here's a quick snippet. Do you have work-life balance? I get that one a lot, especially because I'm still active on LinkedIn. I'm doing this podcast. We know the CFO role is no joke. You've probably read some job descriptions. And yes, what's on the job description is real. Now, for me, I don't believe in work-life balance. I believe in work-life harmony, where your work and your life come together for you to have a rewarding and fulfilling life. For example, what I learn on the job allows me to do other things that fulfill me, because I don't believe that fulfillment all comes from one place. I also understand and came to realize that really corporate America was not built for you to be fulfilled. It was built to maximize shareholders' wealth. And so trying to get all your accomplishments, all your fulfillment out of your work, to me is a recipe for burnout and disillusion at some point and disappointment. So for me, it's that work-life harmony that allowed me to be my best self. So when I learn more about accounting finance, for example, I volunteered with the SBA as a SCORE volunteer, and that is to provide free mentoring to small business owners. And one of the business owners I was able to mentor had a lash salon. She was doing lashes, and I was able to give her advice for free. We're meeting 1 hour a week, or even sometimes 30 minutes every other week, just to check on her and give their and allow her to grow her business. That provided me with such, it just feels great to be able to help in that way. Similarly, now I'm on the board of HOPE, an organization that helps single parents complete their education degree. And I've been a treasurer for almost 3 years. And I work on the budget, the strategic plan with the COO. I do it free because I'm able to have a job that pays me so I can do other things with that knowledge to really drive things that gives me, again, energy and fulfillment. And so I'm able to learn from what I do at HOPE, bring it to ACE because both are not-for-profit organization. And I'm able to also learn from ACE and bring it to HOPE. And in return, make things better, both at work and in the lives of people. Because really at HOPE, for example, we have participants that come in, sometimes is former stay-at-home mom that divorced and now need to go back and get an education. We had one that graduated not too long ago and shared her beautiful story at our gala we did, this month in March. And she said that she went to the grocery store and her daughter wanted carrots. And she said, I didn't have the $1 to buy her carrots. Now, granted, she was living in the suburbs in the Atlanta area in Buford. And so if you know this area, you know, it's a very nice area. But she had to let go because she had been a stay-at-home for 10 years. She had to start over. Now, fast forward, she's a registered nurse. She has her own place and she's able to afford all the carrots. But HOPE was there in that bridge to provide assistance for rent, assistance for childcare, and also with groceries and other program we have wrapped around services. And to see that growth, I mean, it's so rewarding, so fulfilling to do that. And to me, that's what part of work-life harmony is about. Because I don't think that you can completely turn off work and just spending with your time with your family, or turn off what you're going on in your family and do work. Like, you're not a switch. To me, you're a human being. So to me, I try to have my life optimized so I don't show up grumpy at work. And I try to have my work optimized so I don't show up grumpy when I'm having dinner with my family, because those things will spill over. If you listen to the episode I had with Cindy Wilson, the former CFO of Kickstarter, she said it so beautifully. She said, leadership is a lifestyle. And so to me, it's about being disciplined with the choices that I make in my life balance, if I can say, and my work balance. And that means having and maintaining the right standards and the right boundaries. Yes, I'm incredibly disciplined with all these things. The only thing I think in my life that I'm not disciplined with is fitness and food. But everything else, I'm good. So for example, I think the choice of your spouse is important. I was willing to stay single. My parents were divorced and I was like, if I don't find the right guy, I'm going to stay single because I was always driven. I was always ambitious. And I knew if I was going to marry, it would have to be with someone that's secure with themselves, that can be a true partner when we're raising kids, because I'm not going to shrink or dim my light to make somebody else feel better. And so when I met my husband, we'll be married now 15 years, he was like, yes, I can do this. And so he's my best friend, my supporter, love him so much. He supports me in whatever I'm doing, whatever ventures I'm getting or troubles I'm getting myself into. I cook, he cleans. I drop out the kids in the morning. He helps with the homework when they come in the afternoon. So we are a true team because that concept of work-life harmony, because sometimes we think of work-life balance and we think, oh, I can work 40 hours, 20 hours, then I'll be fine because I have all this time for other things. But you could work 20 hours a week, but if you have the wrong spouse, you will still feel miserable. If you have so much chaos in your home, you will still feel miserable even if you work 20 hours a week. So to me, it's really that idea of work-life harmony. And so just like at life, I was disciplined, and thank God for my husband at work, I know I cannot do 80 hours a week. And so I block my time. I let people know ahead of time, I'm going to be off. When I'm off, I even if I see a text or a notification, I do not respond. Because the reality is you train people to treat you a certain way. Because I've seen people who are not director, don't even get the CFO, and they work so many hours. Now, it is fine the first few years of your career when you're young and you don't have much responsibilities. I did that. I worked long hours when I was like 22, 23, 24, 25, 26. But then you have to be careful not to make it a habit. Otherwise, you will always feel burnout, overworked, and underpaid, regardless of the company you work for, regardless of the boss you have, regardless of your title, whether you're an analyst or a CFO, you will always feel that way if you don't know how to set boundaries, because unconsciously you are training people to treat you that way. And so again, this has worked for me for quite some years now. I block my time in the morning. Now I'm starting to block my time in the evening. Because sometimes I'm in so many meetings, I'm like, okay, let me call that time to do it. And I oftentimes show offline. I actually turn my status on Teams as offline, even though I'm still working, but I don't want to be disturbed, right? And I want to show also the right signal. I don't do it all the time, but you know, sometimes you have, we in finance and accounting, we know how we can get. So back to the questions, Wasiya, do you have work-life balance? My answer is this is not applicable. I do have work-life harmony. I have a job I love, the people I truly enjoy working with, where I feel I'm actually operating within my full potential. It allows me to do this podcast. And that tells you I'm not working 100 hours a week, right? Because I have time to do this, to do speaking, to coach, and also, most importantly, to enjoy my kids and spend quality time with my whole family. As you can tell, season 2 will be amazing. Full video episode, audio, so you can listen on the go. And of course, a new space for deeper conversations over on Substack. As always, you'll get the honest, real-world insight from CFOs and strategic business partners, because I'm so picky about the people I bring on, because I want people who have been in the seat, people who have worked closely with CFOs, people who work closely with CFOs right now, whether it's auditors or funders who are actually creating new tools to make the life of CFOs and finance team easier. So if you're new here, go ahead and subscribe. And if you want to be part of the Off the Record newsletter, the link is below. Now, that's it for today's episode of The Diary of a CFO. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to like, review, subscribe, and share with others. The official website of this podcast is thediaryofacfo.com. That's where you'll find all the episodes, all the bios and social media links of the guests I'm bringing on. And if there's any topic you'd like me to cover, simply email me at ask@thediaryofacfo.com. Thanks again for being here. I'm super, super excited for what's coming next. I'll see you soon.